Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we profile the Tulsa Voice, our city's new alt newspaper that follows in the footsteps of Urban Tulsa Weekly. Right now, a twice monthly, the Voice features some of the writing talent from Urban Tulsa along with a laser-like focus on Tulsa culture. From its debut issue with a feature interview with prize-winning playwright Tracy Letts to its latest, its fifth issue, focusing on the small spaces and players of Tulsa's spoken word and poetry slam scene, the Tulsa Voice is documenting our cultural scene. And that's purposeful, says managing editor Natasha Ball. She's our guest today. Ball got started as a freelance writer and reporter before starting her very popular and award-winning blog, Tasha Does Tulsa. Eventually, she moved to This Land Press as an associate editor before being named managing editor of the Tulsa Voice at the beginning of this year. She joins us to talk about the future focus of the Tulsa Voice here on Studio Tulsa. Natasha, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining you.
Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have you finally on the show because you've done so much about talking about Tulsa culture, and now you have this great new position with the Tulsa Voice.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. I've been there since the beginning of January.
Right. It's about a month and a half on the job, but I was talking about Langdon Publishing's decision to take on The Voice after the demise of Urban Tulsa. What was leading the thoughts there? Because, you know, this is not a great time for publishing, and I think that's the conventional wisdom that starting a new thing is kind of a bad idea in this day and age, but mm-hmm. you seem to be finding a new audience and an interesting audience and capturing a lot of Urban Tulsa's old audience.
Yeah, I think that print is actually alive and well, especially on the local level. And I think we've been seeing that in Tulsa a lot recently with, for instance, the Oklahoma Eagle, This Land Press. We have a zine scene that is really starting to bubble and do some interesting things. And then, of course, Urban Tulsa had to cease publication, but that created a space for us. And I think that what we got out of that, a lot of good bones were there, kind of waiting for us to kind of flesh it out, beginning with a great distribution system that, you know, had been in Tulsa for decades, and some great contributors, some of the best writers and reporters in Tulsa. And I think that even the ones who were no longer with the Urban Tulsa, just about every writer or reporter in Tulsa has something to owe to Urban Tulsa Weekly. So we had a lot of those folks ready and willing to jump into whatever would happen next. Because a lot of people believe in this form, which is the alt-weekly. And not that what we're doing is the alt-weekly thing traditionally, but we are trying some new things, and we got a really good start.
Well, I have to tell you, it looks more like an alt-weekly than what we've had. I mean, it just has, and I'm not, no aspersions on Urban Tulsa because they did a great job, but this sort of looks more a little bit more like an alt-weekly in my mind.
Yeah, there's been a lot of thought put into the design of the publication, and what's amazing about that is that this is before I came on board. Their first publication was in late December of last year, and the team is incredible, threw it together in next to no time and got it out the door and put Tracy Letts on the cover, our own Tracy Letts. And just made a big splash, just starting right out of the gate. There's a lot to be said for that, the ability to do that.
So have you tweaked the philosophy of what the Voice is going to be as opposed to the predecessor publication as far as what you're going to cover, what you're not going to cover, and the focus of the publication?
Here's kind of what I'll say what we've done so far, because
it's still a work in progress. You're only five issues old at this point.
Exactly. And it's kind of an experiment in a lot of ways, because you don't really hear of an alt weekly that's not a weekly, right? we're twice a month instead of every week. And so because of that, though, we have an opportunity to kind of slow down and do some different styles of coverage. The music scene here and the art scene here in Tulsa has been important since Tulsa was Tulsa. We're at a crossroads for these things in America. And so covering those things is still going to be our bread and butter and what's the most important to us. What stepping out of that weekly cycle allows us to do is, instead of talking about, focusing on concert reviews or or preview shows and being limited to those things because we just have to get a paper out every week, we can kind of get to know the players in these scenes and kind of start connecting the dots and start to show the meaning of the music scene and the art scene and performing arts and film in Tulsa and kind of how it connects to other parts of the country, other parts of the world, and also backward and forward in time. So that's been a lot of fun.
So that's going to be a part of the ethos as long as it's twice a month.
Yeah.
It'll be less about what's happening this week and more, say, an in-depth look at a theater company or a theater company's changing philosophy or what they're looking at when they're doing plays as opposed to that maybe a particular play or a music venue and what their music philosophy is, that sort of thing.
Yeah, getting into some of that and just applying good writing, good reporting, good thinking to really low and close local level stuff going on. And, of course, we also have a really robust, you know, events and things going on section because that's kind of how I got started and where I come from. And I find a lot of beauty and poetry in events listings because to me, when I see an events listing, I don't see a bunch of black and white, you know, aggregate, just filler stuff. I see little stories hiding in there. And that's where I've gotten a lot of the stories that I've written just over the years as a writer. And so I really believe in the power of the events listings. And so we're really beefing up that offering in the Tulsa Voice.
So when you're out covering a music venue, are you looking for a different angle than just a review of a show or a preview of a weekend event? Are you looking for telling that story in a new way?
Yeah, okay. So for instance, our music writer, there is a center of a part of our music scene in Tulsa is the Sound Pony. And instead of talking about, you know, how cool the Sound Pony is or the shows that are coming up there next week or doing something very timely like that, instead I asked the music writer, why don't you help us get to know this part of the music scene by way of someone's story? You know, introduce us to a band and don't just say, you know, how great the band is or, you know, here are the members and here's what they play and here's when they're playing next. Really tell me a story about these people.
How they came together.
Yeah.
What it's like to sort of play a venue where, you know, you might make a bit of money, you might make only a little bit of money, and
right.
Sort of the tensions involved with that.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that allows the reader to see, to kind of get a glimpse of the meaning of that group to the venue and what the venue means to the music scene as a whole. And also what the music scene now, what's going on now in the music scene in Tulsa means to our past and what's coming up.
Hmm. Well,
it's a big goal.
It is a big goal. And it seems to me that the whole feature of the publication seems to be really on culture, the small C culture in a lot of different ways. Like your cover story for this issue is about a scene that, I have 20-something kids. They know about this scene. Their old man doesn't know anything about it. And it's this sort of little microphone, little boxes with microphones where kids can go up and do poetry. And there's a couple of big profile events, but there are a lot of places around town where they can do it just about any time they want.
That's right. The performance poetry scene in Tulsa right now, we put it on the cover of our February 19th issue, which was just out Wednesday. And what's going on there is so interesting because no one's guarding these little microphones in these small little places. And so our teenagers and our young adults, and I mean, people of all ages and from all backgrounds and from all parts of the city are coming together in these places. And in Tulsa, I think that that's hard to do sometimes for us to kind of cross into another neighborhood or spend time with people who we wouldn't otherwise. And so when these people come together, they're saying things that I don't think that they'd be able to say in other places or in other contexts. And so some of these conversations that Tulsa has been needing to have about, the state of equality in Oklahoma, say, or talking about reconciliation, both in terms of the past and currently. Those conversations are happening on, and those are the big conversations, right? The biggest fights in Tulsa.
The ones nobody wants to talk about because it's so contentious and we don't, really.
And they're happening on our smallest stages. And I have been listening, and I liked what I heard. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know, even if you don't agree with what's being said at that microphone, the fact that it's being said means a lot to Tulsa, I think. And so I wanted to be sure to highlight that this is happening in our city, and it's important, and yeah. it needs to continue to happen.
Yeah, it's yeah. really interesting because a lot of the scenes in Tulsa start out like that, where it is so just a small group of people, and I think the tendency a lot of times is to think, well, nobody else will like this, and then every once in a while some of them bust out, and the whole community is talking about it, and other times it just sort of fades away, and I think a publication like this can lead a lot more people to finding out about some of these. A lot of times there are these just little groups of people coming together. I think the trivia scene is another one that's been getting a lot of
yes.
attention, but that went on for years before anybody knew anything about it.
That's right. Yeah, the trivia scene, our comedy scene is also another really interesting place right now. And again, just what's going on with music, and especially with all ages venues in Tulsa right now, and our really young musicians, I mean, high school age, really incredible things happening. So you'll begin to see more of this as the Tulsa Voice grows.
My guest today is Natasha Ball, the managing editor of the Tulsa Voice, the successor publication to Urban Tulsa as the alt weekly, although it's twice a month at this point. Is any plans to make it a weekly down the road, or are you going to, I assume, slow growth is better than rapid growth and quick failure?
Yeah, that's true. We have a lot of options available to us, and right now we're really focusing on telling really good stories and making sure that we have those things in place first before we make decisions about, going to a weekly publication schedule or something like that.
Now, I know you've only been on the job a month and a half, but is the focus of the newspaper changing through its short life of about 3 or 4 months at this point, or is it a matter of, okay, we're going to add a little more? What exactly is the philosophy of how you're trying to reach an audience and responding to an audience or hearing from an audience and responding to what you're hearing?
Yeah, that's a really tricky thing. And I think that it's always tricky for any, you know, media outlet to kind of figure out what the audience wants, and also keep in mind that this idea that the customer is always right and the reader's always right, you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt sometimes and make some editorial decisions independent of, you know, ideas about what the reader wants and expects. So trying to kind of combine those two things. But you're right, we're very early on in our life as a publication, and so we are doing a lot of listening right now. I would say that's probably about 60% of my job right now, is just making sure I'm out in the community with my ears open, trying to get a sense of what is expected and what's needed.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a southern city, really, when it comes down to it. Nobody's going to tell you to face what's usually what's wrong with it, but what are you hearing about what's right and what could go better?
I think that it's encouraging for our arts and music community to hear that a publication is devoted to that scene and to them and to their work and their passion. And so that's something that a lot of people are really excited about and are encouraged to see that we're doing that, and that that coverage is going to continue for them. I think, too, folks are encouraged by the contributors that we were able to bring over from the Urban Tulsa days. We have some, you know, our film critic, Joe Shansky, and we have Josh Klein talking about TV, which is a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and hearing a lot of good things about those sections of the paper, too.
A contributor to this program, Barry Friedman, was at Tulsa People, is now who's moved over to The Voice.
Yeah, we stole him. We got him. He just kind of went from one publication to another, that's right. But, he's always a lot of fun to work with.
One of the things that's interesting is you're taking a different approach in a lot of your digital side as well, because when you look for the Tulsa Voice webpage, there is no Tulsa Voice webpage at this point, but there is a pretty big presence on Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then you're using something I'd run across, but I didn't know what it was until I was looking at the publication through this, whatever you call it, application issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is sort of an interesting one. It's been around for about 5 or 6 years, and it basically sort of preserves the idea of turning the pages on your computer or on a mobile app. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's the magazine in a digital format, and it's sort of a page turning format.
Yeah. We are going to continue with that format, and we are building a website.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like this place we're in right now where we don't really have a website. And I like it because it means that our readers have to go out and actually pick up the paper. And I like the thought of someone actually, because whenever you're holding a publication in your hands, the reading experience is different than when you're reading online, because what happens when you read online is you see a story that you're interested in, and then you read that story, and maybe you're served an ad or two, you know, in the sidebar or something like that, and then maybe there's a list of articles that you might also be interested in at the foot of the article. Or maybe you just click away. Whereas if you have a paper publication in your hands, odds are you slowed down. You're not on the run. You're not clicking through 20, you know, websites within 5 minutes on your home computer or your iPad or what have you. And the experience of flipping through the pages, and I bet you $20 you're going to find something that you didn't think was there, that you didn't think you'd be interested in, just through the course of doing that, just flipping through the pages and actually having paper and ink in your hands.
Now, Langdon Publishing has had a strong digital presence with Tulsa People for a long time. Are you sort of adapting a lot of their techniques, or are you looking at new ways of reaching your audience? Because the only thing really in common between the two publications, as far as I can see, is that they're the sort of culturally engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But Tulsa People, it's a different demographic. It's mm-hmm. a different socioeconomic class for the most part, and older.
Yeah.
A lot older.
Yeah.
And this is a lot younger publication. So mm-hmm. do the same strategies work, or do you have to come up with a whole new set of digital strategies for that younger audience? I mean, because they're obviously going to be in the new next thing.
Yeah. We're, of course, going to have a website, which is actually a pretty traditional kind of space now.
And in fact, a lot of digital gurus say that the website is, that's so 2003.
Yeah, I think that's maybe what I'm sensing whenever I really like the idea of people going out and getting the paper and actually, seeing someone on the sidewalk with it, or, being able to distribute our content in areas where maybe not everyone has access to the internet, because not everybody does. And so relegating your stories to an online platform is scary to me, because I think the information should be a little more available than that. But we're on social media, of course, we're going to be using that a lot. But really, I think that the true social sharing of our publication and our content is going to happen in the real world. Whether that means you're picking it up at your favorite restaurant or coffee shop, or your friend actually hands it to you. I don't think that you can have a bigger compliment than that as an editor or a publisher, as if someone actually hands off your publication in real life, over the dinner table, over a cup of coffee. That's something I'm really interested in learning more about.
Yeah. What is the learning curve for you? Because, I know you started in digital media and sort of made a name in digital media. And now I'm hearing you say,
well, I know.
I really, really don't want people to read this online. I want them to.
I know. I started a website of my own in 2006.
Everybody knows that Tasha Does Tulsa.
TashaDoesTulsa.com, and all about the best things to do in Tulsa. And, just kind of life in Tulsa, and what that is for one woman and her family was essentially what it was. But that kind of grew into a freelance career and doing local journalism and for a variety of publications. And I still believe in, you know, online media as a way to reach people and as a way to make a difference. But over the course of the past year or so, I've been thinking a lot more about noise in the online space and with social media and how publishers aren't in control of some of those spaces, Facebook, for instance.
And well, you've got to be watching it like a hawk, yeah.
That's true. And so I like the idea of print being, I think that it is a little more free-flowing. I think that it means a lot more whenever you sit down with something in print. And I'd rather reach one person that way than maybe get a quick hit from someone who stumbled across us online or on social media. So I'm kind of re-falling in love with print, I guess is what
so
you can
apparently
say.
There are ink stains on the tips of your digital fingertips.
That's right. I'm going to have to scrub the ink off my keyboard on my computer. So,
well, what about the learning curve going to, you know, sort of being your own person now? You're running an organization and a mm-hmm. news organization and a publication. Has there been an interesting learning curve involved with that?
Not so much. I spent about 3 years with This Line Press,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
Print was a big part of what we did
sure.
there. So I learned a lot during my time there. And I actually came from print even before that. I did some work with Tulsa Business Journal for a couple of years. And so print has always kind of been in my blood. And I remember I come from a long line of newspaper readers. And so newspapers and just print publications have always been around the house and just around, you know, me. So as far as putting one together, though, I am learning a lot because whenever you're the editor of something, you're kind of responsible for a little more than just, you know, filing the story and hoping that someone, you know, puts it in there correctly and all the copy editing's done and everything like that. So
no, you're the ultimate, you know, you're the ultimate figure on all
you
those things.
You are. So. Yeah, that's right. But I have this amazing team over there, and I really looked into that. And I'm learning a lot. I think we're all learning a lot. And we're all, that we get the chance to create this thing together is pretty great.
Now, one thing I haven't seen in The Voice yet, which it may end up happening, is there's not a whole lot of political things and things like that. This is really focusing on the culture of Tulsa. Is that a conscious decision or is that just a matter of getting back up to speed?
Yeah, I think it's getting back up to speed because I think that it's a really important role of the alternative voice, you know, whatever form that actually takes to offer reporting and commentary on, you know, local politics and also just doing investigations and applying journalism at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on that. So more to come.
Well, if you can sort of expand the vision out about a year, what do you hope The Voice will look like in a year?
I am hoping for a publication that is telling stories of people who right now, as we're talking, may not even realize that they have a story to tell. And reaching into those places and those corners of Tulsa, because I think that in our media as it exists now, we see a lot of the same faces and we hear a lot of the same voices. And they're the leaders of our community. And of course, we should, you know, they do have a right to our ears, you know, every once in a while, and our eyes and our minds. And so, but I'm ready to hear from folks who don't normally have a platform to speak. So, I'm hoping to kind of get into more of that. And, you know, ultimately, I want to build a publication of relevance, something that is accessible to Tulsans, whether that means just at the reading, you know, the level of the content that is in the pages, all the way to where can I actually pick this thing up? Can I go out my door and how long do I have to walk or drive my car to actually pick up a copy? And, you know, give Tulsa a publication that they can use to be in community with each other. That's one of the reasons why the events listings is so important to me, because that's really where the conversation starts in my mind, is when people go through those events listings, find something to do you know, with their family or with their friends.
And meet a bunch of other Tulsans
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Well, things and happen.
Yes. And so that's what I want to continue to provide. That's my ultimate hope for this.
Well, I have one last question. What has being the editor-in-chief or managing editor of the Tulsa Voice done to your blogging life?
Yeah, that's that's a really good question. I am thinking a lot about that because I've been doing a lot of listening about that too. You know, how do I blog about Tulsa and not go into competition with myself, for one thing? So I think that, you know, that will evolve kind of as this publication evolves. So there's more in the future for that as well.
Are you blogging as much as you were?
No.
I would imagine not.
Blogging is tough whenever you're putting something together almost from scratch. There's not a lot of time left. I have a kindergartner at home and, you know, a husband with his own career. And, you know, I have other interests, too. I like to hike and I like to be outside a lot. And sometimes the screen is not so appealing after I've been in front of one all day. But there is more to come on that front, on the blocking front. I'm going to figure out what it needs to be going forward.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with the Tulsa Voice.
Thank you.
Fifth issue's out. Title is looking at our nascent young people's poetry boom in the city. And we wish you great success. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The managing editor of the new Tulsa Voice, Natasha Ball, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The fifth issue hit newsstands earlier this week, and the title article looks at Poetic Justice, a new regiment of word warriors fighting the city's biggest battles from Tulsa's smallest stages. You can learn more about the publication through its sister publication's website, TulsaPeople.com. One programming note, our Studio Tulsa on Health host, Dr. John Schumann, made his debut yesterday as host of an hour-long, four-week limited series titled Medical Matters. If you missed a part of it or all of it yesterday, you can hear the rebroadcast tonight at 8 on the Documentary of the Week. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed any of our episodes, you can go online at publicradiotulsa.org and listen on demand. Just find Studio Tulsa and you can search through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.
The University of Tulsa School of Music presents the TU Jazz Band in concert Thursday evening, February 27th at 7:30 in the Gussman Auditorium of the Lorton Performance Center. Featured soloists with the big band will be jazz trumpeter and singer Byron Stripling, whose credits range from Count Basie and Woody Herman to the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, the Carnegie Hall Jazz Band, and the Boston Pops Orchestra. The concert is free and open to the public. Information at 918-631-2130.